Best thing we do when we open when the podcast comes on. Crack open a cold one.
How mad was those fights on Sunday?
Holy crap.
Insane.
Dude, I don't think that's a fight night. They should have just called that a UFC, really.
Some of these fight nights are getting really, really good.
Dude, it was the fight night of knockouts. Like, okay, right off the bat, first round knockouts. The main card opened with a first round knockout. What the fuck did they put in the water for the Numa-Gamera family? Whatever it is, I want a bit of it, and I want one of those beards.
You want one of those beards? Is that why you've been growing your beard out?
I think that's why some people stopped. I think that was partially one of the reasons why I stopped shaving, but I realized I'll never have a beard like that.
Oh, you shaved it?
Yeah, I had to shave.
You said you were not. You said you were not going to shave it until.
Let me explain first. Okay, so the reason why I stopped
that lasted a week,
a month and a half at least. The reason why I stopped shaving was because I went on tour on the weekend, which was mental. By the way, it was one of the best times I've had. But before I went on tour, I actually wasn't really paying attention to my looks lately because I've been working so much. And then one day, about 2 days before the tour, I actually got a proper glimpse of myself in the mirror and I was like, what the fuck? And I actually kind of looked a little bit disgusting.
Nah,
a little bit disgusting. Well, it's just, I don't think I'm yet at that stage.
You're not at that kibibi time.
Yeah. I don't think I'm yet at that stage to grow the proper beard.
Yeah. No, yeah. Or,
but the hair was just so
good. You need to go to Dagestan and drink their water.
Yeah, you need to go to Dagestan and drink that water. Like, fuck. It doesn't matter if you have muscles anymore. Or the only two things you need to prove that you're actually a tough motherfucker is the cauliflower ears and the kibibi beard.
Yeah. All right. Brian Ortega versus Korean Zombie. That was a mad fight. I personally thought Brian Ortega would come out differently, 2.0. I thought he would be differently. He would perform differently, but I thought Korean Zombie would like edge it out to the decision. Nah. Brian Ortega, dominant performance, did incredibly well. Shaved his head for charity. I think he donated the locks or something like that.
I thought that was a real like sweet thing of him to do, really, because considering he actually has like really long hair.
Yeah. Exactly. I thought apparently it came down to his ass or something like that, and he just shaved. He was emotional during the weight cut. He said, "Just get me the clippers." No, get me the fucking clippers. And he just
really
did it. He didn't. He'd been thinking about it, but he didn't plan to do it. He just went. He was weight cutting. He just went, "Fuck it."
Do you think he regrets it then?
No. Because he said, "Oh, I'm gonna grow it back."
Oh, okay.
Or he thought about maybe getting the slick, or was the he old slick back.
Just not.
That's
to
what they thought. They thought was Ortega. It's so dehydrated in the weight cut that he tried to lose weight that way. And I question that because if you've got hair like that, then it could weigh something. You could actually weigh if it's if you've got a little buzz cut, you've got some small amount of short hair, then it's not going to do anything. But if you got down to your ass soaking wet with sweat, it will weigh something. Honestly, will.
Well, especially when you have that much hair,
It's thick.
Yeah, and it's that thick. If you have to lose those couple of extra pounds, you're just sick of being in the sauna. Just shave it all off. Shave off the chest hair. Maybe shave the legs.
I mean, I grew my hair out to a fairly decent length, like to chest height, right? And then I cut it, but I never got it down to my ass or anything like that.
Did you weigh it afterwards?
I did not weigh out.
Shit, my hair weighs like 3 pounds. Fuck.
but that, it gets heavy. Like when you have thick hair, sweat, you're doing exercise, you're running, you're working out, it's a pain in the ass sometimes.
Well, Brian Ortega pretty much did the Britney Spears. He actually shaved. Did you see those memes? Brian Ortega, like three days out.
Do it would have been funny if he shaved his eyebrows as well. He just shaved everything and he just like a skeleton.
Oh. Well, you were saying to me before the podcast, man, the dude's cold. Well,
cold as ice.
But one thing I got to give a lot of respect now to Brian Ortega is the fact that he took so long away from the UFC since his last loss to Max Holloway.
2 years.
And one of the topics I wanted to open up this podcast about was like, there's fighters who take time away from the UFC or take time away from MMA and they come back as beasts, absolute beasts. Like George St. Pierre, he retired one point, came back, and he was better than ever, and then got the title back off Michael Bisping. that maybe it's a reason why Khabib only fights once every, maybe once every year or
he
so.
He only fights that often because he has Ramadan.
Yeah.
And Ramadan means he starves himself horrendously, loses a shit ton of weight. I very much doubt he wrestles that much. So his training probably goes out the window as well, because I can very much doubt if you're going through Ramadan that you're going to train the exact same way. Hell no. That's why he trains. That's why setting up the Conor Dustin thing was a bit weird, because they're trying to, they want to set it up before like April-ish, because then after that Ramadan starts, Khabib's out of commission. He can't, he can't train, it just doesn't work with his religious values.
Yeah.
So that's why a lot of people have been talking about how Brian and Dustin should be as early as possible,
or
Tony or whatever, in order to set up that consecutive fight if Khabib wins.
Yes.
Against Gaethje.
That's a fair point. That's a fair point, because he was always heavily critical of himself when he came to his fights. So I was just another fighter who has succeeded from the time away from the sport, of course, is none other than Masvidal. The dude took, what, 2 years away from the sport?
He took 2 years, yeah.
2 years away from the sport, and he came back, and now he's probably one of the most popular ever. Hell, even Conor McGregor, even though he did some stuff on his time off, when he came back after and beat Donald Cowboy Cerrone, it was literally his best, probably one of his best performances ever done. But arguably, was it a big enough opponent? But there were a lot of talks about, from his coaches, saying Conor is now at a new level. He's not the same level he used to be.
Enjoying it again.
Yeah.
Enjoying it. Also, Robert Whittaker.
Yes.
He's the next one we've got to talk about again. He said himself he was very, very burnt out.
Yes.
After those two fights with Yoel Romero. Can you blame her? Can you blame him?
Absolutely not. Because of the way that he fought Yoel Romero, I don't think there's ever really been many fighters who even come close to like trading hands of him like that.
And then he said when he fought Izzy, he was burnt out. And he said, you can look at the result of that. I was just burnt out. Didn't want to train as much and things like that. So now he's loving the process again.
Yeah.
After we conclude like what happened on Sunday, I really want to talk about that, because UFC 254 is stacked.
It's
a very stacked card, and at a very strange time for us in Australia to watch.
Yeah.
I also want to bring up Jessica Andrade versus Caitlin Kukagayan. Round one, in the last like 5 seconds of the round, gets hit with a very, very powerful liver shot. And she literally runs back, turns and runs away, then puts her guard up again, hits again in the body again. Jessica Andrade moving to 125 is, you know, she's the she's the only woman to have knockouts at all three weight divisions. So kudos to her. Interesting fight. Impressive to see. 125 is Valentina's division, so it's interesting what Jessica Andrade would do, how well she would do against Valentina Shevchenko in the future. Quickly, our own Aussie Jimmy Crute, knockout in the first round against Modestus. Impressive. Very, very... The power that guy has.
Mad power. Like, first round, literally after he won, he literally sat down afterwards and put his arm over him.
Exactly.
He didn't even celebrate.
He's very composed.
He's a very humble dude. I'm going to say right now, I don't think there's ever been a better time to be Australian and be a fan of MMA. There are a lot of upcoming MMA fighters.
Didn't used to be that way.
It wasn't like that. You know, we got Jimmy Crute, Ty DeVassa. We got Kai Kara France. He's New Zealand.
It's New Zealand.
But Australia and New Zealand.
We can like the Kiwis.
Yeah, there's nothing. Of course.
As long as they're Australian, New Zealand, we can be very happy about them.
So we're producing some world class fighters.
Robert Whittaker's Australian, New Zealand, because he was raised in Australia, but he was born in New Zealand.
Okay,
but they consider him an Australian champion. That's fair enough.
Yeah.
You know, just like you would probably consider yourself Australian.
Yeah, I do.
But you were born in England.
Yes, correct.
Yeah, so, that was a really, really good fight. Really, really, really good fight.
Well, I mean, just the caliber of what we had was definitely something good to show. But there was another thing. It's just that they were a lot of first round knockouts were in this one.
Mm.
I mean, the Jimmy Crew was a first round knockout. Jessica Andrade was a first round knockout. And Saeed Numaguimara was a first round knockout. A lot of actually TKOs. There were only quite a few that went to decision. But I mean, next week it just raises the bar for next week, really.
Yeah, there's an interesting one I want to talk about though. James Krause beat Claudio Silva. That was an interesting welterweight fight. Quite competitive fight as well. For Silva, who's usually someone that grapples and takes them down and things like that, he was really trying to trade with Krause and it wasn't really working. Krause has been around for a long time. And what was interesting was in the post-fight press conference, he actually said, he was talking about, I believe his name is Joaquin Buckley. Mm-hmm. Remember the guy with the spinning, step-up spinning back kick?
Oh, yes.
That we were
yes.
talking about before?
Yes. He's already booked for his next fight.
Yes, I believe so. And James Krause actually said, he's a shitbox. I don't like the guy. And I was like, what? You know, I wonder, what's the beef between them two? Apparently, Buckley reached out to Krause 3 or 4 weeks ago, and he went and said, oh, can I train with you? And Krause said no, because he doesn't like the negativity and the shit talking that Buckley brings, apparently.
Really?
Yeah.
But he's such a humble dude.
He seems very humble. So, but it's interesting to know all these different fighters' perspectives on each other. But James Krause, it looks like James Krause, he says, I'll fight Buckley. I'll move up to middleweight again and I'll fucking fight him. So that's an interesting fight. Very interesting fight.
Well, there's already a little bit of beef brewing between the two of them. So, and you know how much I love beef.
You do love beef.
I love a little bit of beef. You know, there ain't nothing more that I love than a bit of beef between two fighters. I mean, speaking of beef now, recently I was on my way here. Mm. And one thing I keep thinking about Conor is this, he refuses to let.
Did you see the Twitter?
Yeah, the Twitter. I read this Twitter. The last thing I did before I walked in here was just check my phone on Instagram on the Last Set podcast. If you're not following us, by the way, please do. We're actually putting on some quality content lately. But it's just, what is it? Conor saying, oh, nah, all good. Just got a little bit banged up. After that, I banged his brother or something like that.
No, his other one was when he was breaking down the rounds. He said, yeah, I had round one.
And then he made a joke about punching, I think it was Khabib's brother. Cousin,
oh yeah, because they all started scrapping afterwards when Khabib jumped out of the cage into the crowd to fuck up Dylan Dennis. You know, I've seen his the old Twitter post that he put up saying like what rounds he won and things like that. I've looked back on it, you could say he won McGregor one round three. He couldn't have round four because he got choked out in the round four. So do I think it was a competitive fight? Yes. I thought McGregor was surprisingly very good takedown defense against Khabib. Mm-hmm. But we were talking about on the podcast last week that when McGregor did something very, very well and he did, you know, McGregor has really good grappling, right?
Mm-hmm.
When he's tried to out-grapple Khabib, then he would make a mistake and then Khabib, you know, we were mentioning on the podcast last week, where if you make a mistake, Khabib will capitalize on it. He really will, which is interesting to think with Justin Gaethje, who has a defensive wrestling style because of his wrestling background.
Did you watch the countdown to UFC?
I did. I watched the countdown. Have you watched the embedded? I love the embedded as well.
Man, it was like an insane countdown. Like, Gaethje is really, really preparing hard for...
He's a likable guy as well.
He is, and he's mad scary though. He's mad. Like,
he enjoys the fight.
His violence. He enjoys the fight. He loves to scrap. I think he's gonna be like, yep. Yeah, the moment that bell rings, he's gonna try and scrap with Khabib. And then if Khabib's gonna shoot for the takedown, Gaethje's gonna make sure he does everything I can to keep him standing up. That is honestly, I believe, would be the game champ. There was one more thing that I noticed when I was watching the fights, is none other than Khamzat Chimaev. That's how we say his name, right?
Khamzat
Chimaev. Hamzat Chimaev. Hamzat Chimaev.
Right. Yeah, I would say Khabib is actually Habib. You don't pronounce the K.
Oh, okay. Hamzat.
Yeah, it depends where you are. I believe in Russia you say Hamzat, and other places you'll pronounce the K.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So Hamzat Chimaev was actually in the... he was actually at the fights.
He was next to Dana. Dana's got a new boyfriend.
So there's two things I wanted to talk about, basically. The first one is how humble that dude is. There was a guy who he already beat, and he was actually giving
John
him,
Phillips.
Yeah, and he was already giving him advice in his locker room. Super humble dude, right away. And he's sitting next to Connor, and I saw all these memes about how it started, how it's going, like Connor and Dana, and now it's Hamzat and Dana.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing I got to ask. I kind of feel like Dana wants Hamzat to be his little money train now. I honestly believe that. When have we ever had a... I don't think we've...
Connor's out, Hamzat's in.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. He's the new hype train. The dude's smashing through the division. There's so much hype around him. I remember when on the MMA chat rooms that we followed from the last set, people were saying this dude was already in the prelims and he had a ridiculous amount of hype around him. He just, last fight was a one-hitter quitter. He's been double booked for this year. He's basically asking the question right now, is Hamzat the new money train for the UFC? Will he be the new poster boy?
Yeah, which was funny because there was Connor, then there was, you know, then there was like Sean O'Malley, and then Sean O'Malley didn't, something happened with Sean O'Malley, and then he's jumped to someone else. Yeah, he's jumped to Hamzat now.
Well, the thing is with Hamzat is that dude literally just, he's like Gaethje in a way. They literally just love to fight. There's no, you don't hear anything them about them talking about money, because when fighters get a lot of hype train behind them, they get a massive following, a massive popularity. That's when they start asking for more money. I follow Hamzat a bit on Twitter. I can't remember him making a single tweet about
money. Just wants to fight. He wants to fight. He was wrestling with DC, actually.
He was?
He was wrestling with DC on Abu Dhabi. They're play wrestling just like they usually will. And DC said he's strong. He's strong. He's got like a tall upper body and things like that. And they've got that awkward style with Russians when they wrestle with you. They're almost, you know, they do an amount of work and wrestling you. But they have this vibe that it takes very little effort. You know, they've got that awkward kind of style. The Khabib versus Justin fight is probably going to be one of the biggest fights in 2020.
Yes.
This is insane. I mean, Khabib Nurmagomedov, you know, an excellent, excellent grappler. Probably one of the best in the UFC. This is bread and butter, to be fair. His striking's got a little bit better over time and things like that. Justin Gaethje, we never really see his defensive wrestling that often. Him and Trevor Whitman is his wild card for them to formulate a strategy in order for that to happen, and for Gaethje to hit those bombs. Because, you know, we've seen in the past where, you know, the only times where Khabib has looked, you know, like human was maybe McGregor, a little bit, Poirier, and a bit of a Quinter. So some of these strikers have been able to get some chinks in his armor, right? Have they been able to pull off a decisive victory? No, not even close, to be fair. Justin Gaethje, a lot of people were saying that Tony Ferguson is probably Habib's kryptonite in a way. Could Justin Gaethje pose a greater threat than Tony Ferguson stylistically?
Here's what I got.
I think so.
Here's what I got to ask though. Ever since the Gaethje Tony fight, when Gaethje won, before that, everyone was literally talking about Habib versus Tony. Let's say Gaethje wins, right? Mm-hmm. Hypothetically. Does that mean we'll ever get a Tony versus Habib fight now? Because I feel like if Tony wins, right, that Habib fight is thrown out. If Habib versus Tony is pretty much thrown out the window. If Khabib wins, I don't see the likely chance of him, of Conor McGregor, getting his rematch anytime soon. I feel like maybe there might be a war between either Tony or Conor to be next in line to get it, or Tony beats Gaethje in a rematch and goes back and tries to fight Khabib. But either way, the fight's bloody cursed, man.
It could be one of those fights that's on the list of competitions we just don't see.
Yeah.
It doesn't. It seems to be cursed. Something happens. No matter how many times you book it, it's fucked. Like Khabib versus Tony, I think they booked it 4 or 5 times. Fucked. Yeah. Every time. If it's not injuries, it's people, something fucks up with weight, whatever. Okay, let's be in a hypothetical land and we'll say Khabib wins against Gaethje decisively. Mm-hmm. Khabib's next option is either that dream fight that he always wanted to be 30-0 when he fights GSP, right? Is that likable? Fight for most people? Yeah. Is it likely it's going to happen? I don't know. Because UFC doesn't like catch weights.
Yeah.
GSP is a small welterweight, but he managed to bulk up to 185 to beat Michael Bisping. Or his other option is to fight whoever the winner of Conor and Dustin is. Although it's not official, it seems to be going down that road.
Mm.
Because they're trying to set it up for the Cowboy Stadium. So Connor said, I'll do January 23rd, if that's the date.
It's not official. It's not official.
But he says, I want it at Cowboy Stadium because Cowboy Stadium is apparently able to get about 80,000 people.
Wow.
And they said they were willing to try and get to something about 50% occupancy, which means like 40, maybe 50% of people. 40 to 50,000 people in the Cowboy Stadium, which is interesting because it works for Connor because Connor wants to have a scrap with an audience, right? Mm-hmm. Brings in a ton of hype, brings in a ton of tickets, and it works for the UFC because, you know, they want to sell tickets and their best cash cow right now is always Connor, right?
Not for long.
But Dana said he doesn't want to do any stadiums until they're 100% occupancy. So it raises some weird questions. I really hope Connor fights Dustin. It's going to be shit if this doesn't happen, right?
Me too, yeah.
Not that I wouldn't be happy with Dustin versus Tony. That'd be a sick fight as well. But I think coming back to your question is Khabib fights the winner of Dustin versus Connor and fingers fucking crossed it happens.
Yeah.
Because I want to see that fight.
I want to see that fight too.
And if I had an ounce of money in my bank account, I would fly over to America, do the 2 weeks of isolation, and get those tickets. But I don't have that, and I'm not sure if that's ever going to happen.
The last set live at Dustin versus
Connor. Would be sick. That would be so like, good.
They'll literally just we'll make heaps and heaps of videos of us just losing our shit.
Yeah, exactly.
We're probably going to have to film ourselves losing our shit on the weekend again. Yeah. Because I got a feeling there's going to be some knockouts.
I feel like there will. I feel like Khabib versus Gaethje, just because of Khabib's record and with how well he's performed in the past and his conditioning grappling-wise and able to go those 5 rounds, I sway towards Khabib. But holy shit, Gaethje.
Yeah.
I really think he's going to be Khabib's greatest test ever.
Yes.
And I feel like Gaethje has insane power. And yeah, if he connects well, shit, I don't know what happens.
Yeah.
I really don't. Robert Whittaker versus Jared Cannonier.
Ooh, killer gorilla.
Killer gorilla. Heavyweight, light heavyweight, now middleweight.
He's been on Jared for a while. You know, even Izzy's like, yep, Cannonier could be next, you know, if he wins. What about a rematch with Whittaker? Because Whittaker's now better than ever.
I think Whittaker versus Adesanya too would be, it would sell so well.
Yeah.
It really would. It could be so. I think Cannonier is an absolute beast, right? And I think he's got mad power. I think Whittaker's got a lot of miles after... you know, fighting Yoel Romero and things like that. But he looks so good against Till.
Yeah.
Although Till did drop him with that elbow, Whittaker recovered. He did very well. I sway towards Whittaker, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
His because his wrestling ability is very good. His striking is good as well. You know, the amount of fighters he went through, I think he was a 7 or 8 win streak before he got snapped by Adesanya, who's now the champion. I sway towards Whittaker. I think Cannonier has a huge amount of power. I think he's very talented. I think he's very good kickboxing-wise. I've seen his kicking. He seems to mix in his spinning back kicks and roundhouse kicks very well with his striking. But I think Whittaker, I've got to sway towards Whittaker. Yeah.
He's incredibly humble, Jared Cannonier. Do you remember when he fought Anderson Silva.
And
Anderson Silva, I think he damaged his knee or something during the fight.
Yeah, and he was very quiet while the think it was in Brazil, and they were
going at him, man. And he just was like, and then he just left. He didn't say anything. I don't think he even got an interview.
He did say a little bit, but he wasn't like Raging Al, because Raging Al went and said, "Yo, you booing me? I just fucking fought for you. Are you booing me?" Cannonier just went, he's not gonna sway the crowd. He's really not. What was interesting though, I was watching the countdown, and Cannonier says, "Oh, I've been trying to get towards my spirituality." He's got, you know, crystals and special rocks, and he pulls out rocks and things like that. It's interesting that a fighter is able to open up about like what kind of, you know, spiritual or even mythical kind of objects they use during fight week and fight camp. Yeah. It's interesting that they get to show that on the embedded. Yeah. I thought it was a bit, but to be fair, everyone's got their own religion or their own culture or their own hobbies and things like that. So fair enough.
Now, there was another fight I wanted to mention that was also on that card, man. It's the one that people are a bit sleeping on a little bit, was the Magomed Ankle. How do you say his name, Jack? You know how to say his name. You know what I'm talking about.
Magomed Ankalev versus Ion Cutelaba.
Ion Cutelaba, because the two of those guys hate each other.
That one's fell through before in the past as well, because... a bit of context to everyone that's listening is that they have fought before. Cutelaba went and walked over. You know, he's feeling very amped up. He's, you know, there's a lot of stress and emotion in there. He's walking towards Magomed, and usually they come towards each other and stop.
Yeah,
Cutelaba doesn't stop. He keeps walking, and he actually just walks into him. Magomed goes in. You know, I think he gets some underhooks. And kind of just spins them around, and they break, and everyone's going, "What the fuck was that?" And I think Cutelaba was just feeling, and he was feeling intense. He was like, "I'm ready to fucking fight, dude."
Yeah, those guys, they want to bang. Well, because Ankalev, he is actually 11 in the rankings, but Cutelaba, he's not ranked at all.
He's not ranked
in the last fight. Ankalev basically had him wobbling, and here's why people want to see the fight again, because he was wobbling. But he was still trying to fight as well, and then the referee stopped
him.
He was
fighting well as well. I think Even was trying to bait him in by making the wobble a bit more, and then you bait him in and you go for the huge overhand and boom.
Because we've seen that before.
I cannot remember the fighters' names, but he gets a tough liver shot. Yeah. He holds. Looks like he's about to fall down. He comes in straight overhand, knocks him out, and then the guy falls back. And it actually did hurt, but he exaggerated.
Yeah.
To pull him in so that he could go for the overhand, which worked.
Well, but their last fight...
It was a terrible stoppage, let's be clear. It was a terrible stoppage.
He was wobbling, he was getting cracked, he was hurt. I don't know, maybe he was putting it on, but he was mad as hell when he found out when he stopped the fight.
It took him a while to calm down. He was ready to throw hands to the ref as well.
Yeah, that's the thing. And so I was going to say, mate, even if they had the same... Imagine if they had the same ref this time. And then
that would be hilarious, and that guy just goes like that. I'll fuck you up after this.
He'll be like, "Oh, you're fighting him, not me."
Yeah, exactly. One that is kind of gone under the radar as well, because a lot of been talking about the Cutelaba, but even more so, Walt Harris versus Alexander Volkov. Now we know Alexander Volkov. He lost against Derek Lewis.
Yes,
remember that fight? He was winning up to the last. The last minute or something, and then Derek Lewis, boom, overhand, takes him out. Walt Harris, what was his last fight?
Well,
his last fight he lost, I think it was against, who was it against? Alistair Overeem.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, Volkov also lost his last fight against Blades. Do you remember?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So that was a bit of a boring fight as well. But, however, Volkov, you know, he's a pretty, he's still a pretty active fighter. Oh, not that active, but he beat Greg Hardy. You know, he beat Fabricio Wadam. He beat Stefan Struve. He beat Roy Big Country Nelson. So the guy's definitely very, very respected. You know, he's got a really good kickboxing background. He's huge. So
he is very, very tall, and coming out of Bellator as well. He fought in Bellator, and now he's fighting the UFC. His last fight was a loss to Curtis Blaydes, but then he, you know, he beat Greg Hardy before that. Then it was a loss before against Derek Lewis. But then before that, you know, 6-fight win streak. Not to be slept on, because up to that point with the Derek Lewis fight, he was winning. He was winning that fight, outstriking him, and just managed to use his range and his lanky frame a bit more often than Derek Lewis, but he just got caught.
Yeah.
And that's just what happens, and that's what makes MMA so interesting.
And Walt Harris's last fight was against Alistair Overeem, which I believe he lost to Overeem as well. That's correct, yeah.
Round 2KO.
So, again, great fight. Two guys, both coming off a loss, both got something to prove. You know, both have 8 losses as well.
Yeah, yeah. Volkov's got a little bit more experience, especially he's got quite a big amount of kickboxing experience in that. Walt Harris, though, I must say, surprisingly very fast for a heavyweight. His boxing is very crisp, and his movement is actually very dynamic for and very, he's got speed, he's quick. He reminds me of like a Stipe Miocic or something like that. The speed he has, and he has, it's not the speed of his hands as much, it's his dynamic movement. I thought Walt Harris is definitely, I always seem to watch out for the ones that have that dynamic movement, because it makes them very evasive and very, they typically also have very good cardio as well, because they have to keep that up for a long period of time.
Yeah.
Do
you know the story, one of the saddest stories ever about Walt Harris?
It was his daughter.
It was his daughter. He was abducted and killed. Mm. And then he had to fight 7 months later. And then I think, did he win that fight?
No, that was the fight against Alistair Overeem.
Oh, that was the fight that he lost.
And in
the interview, he basically said, oh, I could hear it. He was saying things like, I could hear her telling me, Daddy, I want you to go back. I want you to fight. I was like, oh, man. And then there was such an emotional moment when he was on the ground. And then Alistair Overeem, like, comes over to him and puts his arm around him. And then basically people asked him, what did he say to you on the ground? He says, let's train together. And I'm like, man, that's absolute mad respect for the poor dude.
You gotta
give it to him, man. I mean, there's a lot of it is
sad, and it is tragic. It was interesting that Overeem went and said to afterwards, and he said, you know, you got asked, did you feel bad because you had to come out and fight against a guy who's just gone through such crazy tragedy with his daughter, which is fucking horrific, by the way, right? Overeem said, look, I did feel bad, but I had to separate it because I'm here to do my job and to put money on my family's table and that. So it is, you know, he does have a point there. He definitely does. That is a huge, huge card. Huge, huge card. Even on the prelims, you were telling me, on the prelims, we've got a lot of interesting fights. We brought up Stefan Struve, who's fighting against Ty Duvasa. So that's an interesting fight as well.
Alex Oliveira.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be a good...
I want to see Bam Bam. I want to see Ty Duvasa because I think...
You've got another Umar Nurmagomedov.
No, he's off the card.
He's off card.
He has a staph infection.
I thought you were going to say coronavirus.
No. They were checking because he has staph infection. He's got a high fever. He's vomiting, sweating, things like that. A lot of these are flu-like symptoms, but it is staph. And, you know, you work at the UFC gym yourself. You've seen all the flyers out there. This is what ringworm looks like. This is staph, what staph. Man. You don't want staph. A lot of fighters have had staph. Yeah. A lot of them, you know,
bacterial infection.
Exactly. Kevin Lee, Conor McGregor, all of them. They've all had staph.
Conor got a staph?
Yeah, yes.
When did Conor get a staph?
I believe he had staph before the Diaz fight.
Oh.
The first Diaz fight, he had staph.
Oh. Right.
I think he's had staff a couple times, actually.
Really? I didn't know that. That's interesting.
I think he, yeah.
Anyway, speaking of Abu Dhabi.
I'm going to fact check myself, but yeah, okay. Keep going.
Speaking of Abu Dhabi, you know who's on Abu Dhabi right now?
Michael Chandler. Have you seen his social media? He looks strong.
He looks
good, and he's cutting weight. He's always big for light. I know,
but he's a big fella. But the dude loves to train. I don't think anyone loves to train more than that guy. If you check out his social media, it's just videos of him just training.
Mm.
And he's so excited as well. And then there was a video of the guy coming up to his door. I think he got given the all clear to go and train. And he's at Abu Dhabi. And I was like, I think he's waiting for someone to pull out.
Yeah, so he really is.
He's that keen to go into the UFC, even though he's not officially signed a contract with them yet, has he?
No.
So how would that work then?
I know. I believe he's signed to the UFC, but he is not signed for a bout agreement.
Oh, okay.
He is agreed to be the step in for if something happens to Gaethje, and to be fair, why not have Chandler there? Because they brought out coming back to the staff thing, people were concerned because Umar Nurmagomedov was part of Khabib's team. If he has like COVID-like symptoms, will he test positive for COVID? I would say no. It's staff. But staff is highly contagious, especially in grappling and wrestling environments, because it's always on the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu floors and things like that if you're not wiping them down and cleaning properly and things like that. And they all wrestle and work together and eat together and shower together probably. So there is that possibility that Khabib would get staff. Do I think that guy would pull out of a fight because he's got staff? Probably not.
No.
But, yeah.
As long as he doesn't pass it on to any of the other fighters.
Yeah, exactly.
That could pretty much jeopardize, because Khabib and Magomed, they train together as well with all of Khabib's family.
Yeah.
So one of them gets it and they all pass it on to each other, the whole family is fucked. I don't want that, especially when it's one of the biggest fights of the years. Anyway, the other thing I wanted to mention to you was, I just realized this, I found out about this morning, is that Call of Duty is now one of the is official sponsor of UFC for an undisclosed period of time, because the new Call of Duty game is coming out, I think, in November. Yeah, Call of Duty Cold War. Have you seen the trailer for it?
I haven't seen it, but I've seen that they're working with the UFC.
Yeah. That's a big move for Call of Duty.
The UFC has worked with Call of Duty before, though.
Have they?
They have. They've done that in the past because, I mean, coming back to fucking McGregor, it seems like all we fucking talk about is McGregor. But McGregor, he was put in Infinite Warfare?
Yes, that's right. Yes, he was put in Infinite Warfare. Mm. I think he had a cameo in Infinite Warfare. And that was just something that they used to help push the game. But for Cold War, I don't know, I don't think they put any of the fighters in the game. But the game itself has got so much hype around it, because people talked about, when it comes to Call of Duty, one of the best Call of Duty games ever made was Call of Duty Black Ops. The first Black Ops. That had so much hype around it because of the story.
Yeah.
That the game revolves around, you know, it's got to do with espionage and brainwashing and like Vietnam War. The next one is set basically after that. And a lot of Call of Duty fans just want to go back to that old classic style of Call of Duty. They don't want to be futuristic anymore. And I think that's one of the reasons why Infinity Warfare was one of the least selling in terms of Call of Duty games.
More of a flop compared to the others.
Yes, correct.
I think that's because you've got Halo, you've got these more lot of them are futuristic, you know.
Yeah.
I think Call of Duty, they like to just have a simple modern warfare game.
Yeah.
Coming back to that, because I had to fact check myself, yeah, McGregor had, staff. He had staff.
Man, when did he get staff?
Before UFC 196, their first fight. Apparently, he also had a fracture in his foot or something.
Oh, okay.
For the second Diaz fight, but
that didn't stop him though.
No. But staff, man, everyone gets fucking staff. Yeah. I mean, you'll see you work at the UFC gym. I always see it when I work out there and go to the toilets. There's always those big signs with this is what staff looks like. This is what ringworm looks like. This is what, you know, all of them look like.
It's not pretty, man. It's a big gym. We only get one area. We got one area for all the BJJ.
Mm-hmm.
The BJJ classes, they're probably some of the most popular classes. And we have the Shark Tank, where we do about an hour and a half pretty much of just straight rolling.
Yeah.
And like you're switching positions constantly and you're rolling with multiple people a session. So yeah, they do really, really sweat it out. And beforehand we do the BJJ fundamentals classes. So again, you only got a little bit of time to properly wipe down a match, which we are super, super strict on, by the way.
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah.
Yeah. And the last thing is, like, if I think it's because those sorts of infections are very highly contagious. And another one that comes from and it's just you always make sure you got to be wearing something on your feet when you come off the mat, you know, like your thongs or whatever, because you can carry it from off the ground or drop it on the ground, then pick it up onto the mats, and then
that's why as soon as you come off the mats, you need to put your shoes back on.
Yeah,
instantly, yeah. And make sure you wipe down all the mats anyway. All right, this is funny. So Darren Till. You know he's been doing a lot of the Raw Dog stuff.
Yeah.
And he's brought out Raw Dog.
We should buy one of his shirts.
I think we should. Yeah. The Raw Dog. I really want to buy the Engage apparel. You know, the one that other...
Yeah.
Because I've noticed that... was it Ben that had the gloves?
Yeah.
Ben had the gloves and the Engage stuff. But I want to get...
it's not cheap, though. That shit's expensive.
But I want the shirts. They have really cool shirts. Yeah, and
they used to...
I want the gloves. The gloves look sick.
There used to be a store across the road from the UFC gym. I think it shut down. I think it went out. I think they just went out of business. Because if you think about it, it's designer fight apparel.
MMA fight store stuff, especially, it's quite a niche thing anyway.
Yes.
Yeah. What I was coming to, though, he's brought out, you know, Raw Dog Shop, and that he's actually advertising gloves that has Raw Dog with the emoji of the Raw Dog. It's getting way too far now because now he's actually using... That's going to piss off Mike Perry even more. He's using...
It's good business, man.
It is good. It's fucking really good business. But Mike Perry, it must annoy him even more because now he's using the Raw Dog thing literally to make money now. So he's got to hate that. To be honest, I wouldn't be bothered with a Mike Perry, Darren Till fight.
Who knew an insult about a man's girlfriend could lead the way to a franchise?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Anyway,
there was something I wanted to ask you, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
What's the deal with all the fighters taking photos of their fists?
It is apparently a stand for fair pay.
What guarding?
Fair fighter pay. Because they've had having issues, you know, with the UFC and that. They want to be, you know, they want to have the correct monetary contribution to the amount of hours they put in, to the injuries that they get, to all that stuff. Because, you know, when you get in there, you can't, you're not like a boxer, you can fight again, or you don't sustain the same injuries, you know. In an MMA fight, you know, you're cracking shins, knees, elbows. You know, there's a lot to go into an MMA fight and all the costs and things like that. They want to have fair pay. They want to have fair pay. And they've noticed that, you know, I mean... so they disclosed the pay for the last fight. Believe Brian Ortega made 200K or something like that, or 150K, something like that. But I can't remember the particular number, but I do know Korean Zombie only got 90K for that fight.
What?
90K.
90K, as if.
I saw it on Instagram. It's not confirmed.
Do you reckon Ortega got a lot of money because he won? Well,
I think Ortega will get the win bonus, obviously.
Yeah.
But there was a big discrepancy, like 90K just bang on basic. When let's talk about Teofimo Lopez Jr. versus Lomachenko.
Yes.
I actually thought Teofimo was going to win.
Yeah.
Because there was, I don't know, I'll come back to that in a sec, but those guys. Didn't minimum they got over $1 million?
Yeah, yeah. Well, boxing's been around for a lot longer, so it's always in the money.
It's established, made longer. You know, it's got a larger fan base, things like that. They pulled it off very well, just like the UFC. You know, in the no crowd thing going on, but Teofimo Lopez, he looked incredible. He looked incredible, and
he's 23.
He's 23,
and he beat a 32-year-old fight veteran. Unbelievable.
They kind of did set up Lomachenko to be this like godlike, you know, warrior, and he is. He's incredible. He's incredible, right? But you know, I noticed Teofimo probably a few years ago, right, on my social media, and I noticed I'd been watching him train and watching his fights and that, and I was taken back because I just thought he had great speed, but he was very like elusive and evasive and that. I thought he looked incredible. Yeah, I don't think many people thought he was going to beat Lomachenko. I don't think many did. Most people picked Lomachenko.
They just thought maybe his experience, his skill, you know, we're just going to outweigh the young guy, and they sort of thrown him to the wolves. But the kid really, really stuck it to him. I think he threw way more shots than Lomachenko.
He did. And I think Loma started to turn it up in the later rounds, but it was too late. You know, he didn't do it. He didn't do enough for it to... I can see a rematch happening in the future.
Yeah,
for
that's
sure.
The other thing I wanted to bring up, because it won by decision. I reckon Lomachenko...
One of the judges scored it fucking horrible.
Yeah.
It was like 109 to 117. Oh. And I was like, huh?
Yeah.
Whereas all the other ones were a lot closer. I think a lot of people... The general consensus was... Loma versus Teofimo was that Lopez Jr., he won,
yeah,
clearly.
But it wasn't by a
It was not
margin.
A huge margin. Correct. It was much shorter than they'd let off.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I did like, however, that in boxing, and this is an interesting question I'd like to pose to you, is that in boxing, you, as the rounds progress, you see the general scorecard.
Yes.
Right? On the screen.
Yeah.
Why don't you get round per round live on for the UFC?
That's a good question.
Because, you know, to bring up one, and I'd hate to do this to a fellow Australian, but Volkanovski versus Holloway 2, I mean, certainly different from Holloway, the fight with first one, I feel like Volkanovski definitely won the first fight.
Okay.
Right? Holloway versus Volkanovski 2 gets dicey. Because it's a close fight and a razor thin close fight, right? That's why a lot of people went, Holloway won, or Volkanovski won. And a lot of them thought that Holloway got robbed. Why don't they do round by round, you know, round by round, who won that across the judges? Or why not afterwards, if there is a discrepancy, why don't they get the judges to jump at the end of the press conference and actually be like, this is why I chose this. This is why I chose that. Because there was pictures of one of the judges with the Loma versus Lopez fight. During their fighting, the dude's texting on his phone, one of the judges. Now, it gets ridiculous when things like that happens. I think the judges should be set to a higher standard, ex-fighters, that's a fairly normal opinion. But for them to possibly, if there is a razor-thin decision... Why can't they come up to the press conference and be like, all right, I understand there's a bit of confusion. I understand why you may not have liked my decision. Here is my reasoning why.
Yeah, well, one thing they, the UFC judging system is derived from the boxing point system, basically.
It doesn't work.
It doesn't work. There's a lot of arguments about the UFC's judging system that we need more judges. Like, what's wrong? Three is just not enough.
I think you need to have an odd number, so it needs to be five.
Yeah, and they need to start scoring 10 rounds or 9-9 rounds, basically. It's rare for judges to give out a draw for a round. It's quite rare.
Quite rare.
Quite rare. And a lot of people were saying online that Volkanovski versus Holloway case, the judges just misscored it really well because... One thing that they talk about is in terms of takedowns. Like, how much does a takedown score in terms of striking? You know what I mean? Takedowns overscore striking, or was it the style of takedown? And who are these people that are allowed to be judges as well? Mm. Like, they should get ex-fighters to become judges. Ex-fighters, but those ex-fighters can't have to be really, really as mostly unbiased as they can, because let's say if it was an ex-fighter and he becomes a coach and it's one of his own fighters...
Weird
the match which
too,
he's scoring for, it's
going to
be easy, going to be biased for him.
Yeah, if you want an ex-fighter and then they become a coach or something like that, because then they can't have any, they can't be friends with them and things like
exactly,
that.
Exactly, that was the case of Dan Hardy. Mm. And when his mate was getting knocked down in the octagon, he was yelling, stop the fight, and then he got into an argument with Herb Dean about it. Mm. You know, it's got to be an ex-rec, and the best way the UFC can have its own judging system is if they get ex fighters, people who so who know the sport and know the importance and can quickly judge them. You get more than three. I can't say at least five.
They have to be five.
At least five. Five's a good one. And they need a better definition. I think of the sport.
After the fight, if they don't want to do a press conference, they have to write a written report why they scored why.
Yes.
If it is a main event.
But we release score. They release scorecards.
They release scorecards, but they don't tell you the reasoning why.
Yeah.
And I feel like
explanation would be
feel
better.
Like, and now if you did it for every fight, like you'd have a huge amount of paperwork and you'd have to pay the judges a serious amount of money.
Yes.
But I think you should not even replay the judges' reactions, but have a report for the main and the co-main event.
Yes.
After the fight, five judges per fight. And they have to be unbiased, ex-fighters. If you really want to go into specifics, have one be a wrestling dude, have one be a Brazilian jiu-jitsu dude, yes. Make one a kicking or a taekwondo or karate background, make one a boxing one.
There you go.
So
you got different coaches from different disciplines as well, judging.
Yeah, and another one could be some other form of martial art or something like that. I don't know what else you want to pick. You know, if you want to get into specifics and you say, well, if you get five judges and they're all strikers, then they're going to be biased towards the striking guy and things like that. Makes sense, right? Why not have one per... The thing is, the UFC, I don't even know if they want to clean up the scoring, because even if they fuck up the scoring, right, it produces controversy.
And they like it.
And they like it. Yeah. And it works, and you do a rematch, and people will tune in because there's negativity. I don't even know if they want to fix it.
No.
I don't know. I don't even know if they want to fix it.
No, that's a valid point. Yeah, that's a valid point.
It works.
It works.
Well, even us, we can't shut up about Max Holloway versus Volkanovski too.
So I reckon there'll probably be a trilogy. But it won't be anytime soon. It's got to be further down the line.
I think Holloway has a fight, fights again.
Yeah.
Goes for the title again.
Because since Ortega's win, Volkanovski's like, yeah, let's do it. Because I think Ortega versus Volkanovski would be a great fight.
Yeah. Everyone's kind of forgotten about Zabit though. Because Korean Zombie, number four. Zabit was number three. Brian Ortega was number two. I believe Holloway was one.
Mm.
And... Volkanovski's champion. So, but no one was talking about Zabit because the Zabit Yair Rodriguez fight was supposed to occur, and there was an issue with I think it was a high ankle sprain with Zabit. I don't know, it was with Zabit. Rodriguez. That would have been an insane striking match.
Mm-hmm.
An insane striking match because, you know, they both use the Sanda taekwondo and karate and all these spectacular kicks and things like that. That would be an insane fight if it was to go five rounds or something like that. It's just a shame it's fell through because they were supposed to fight in August.
Yeah.
So I still feel Zabit is the dark horse of that featherweight division.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of great talent. Not to say there's not great talent in the featherweight division as well. Do you think Ortega has enough to beat Volkanovski?
Good question. I would like to see him fight Zabit first. I would like to see him fight either Zabit or Max Holloway next.
But I feel like
coming back off one fight, then going straight for the title was a little bit of a stretch.
But that's what they were doing. Ortega versus Zombie was for the number one contender.
Okay.
So Ortega has said he's going to fight Volkanovski.
Yeah, well, just...
Now that... Let's say they are going to fight, right? Who do you sway towards? Does Ortega have enough tools in the shed to... create problems for Volkanovski?
I think he can.
Yeah?
I think he can.
I think he poses a threat. Volkanovski...
I know.
He is underrated. He is... You know, he is a well-rounded champ.
It's just the way that Max Holloway dominated him in that last fight. And then Volkanovski beat Holloway. So I kind of feel like he's enough to give him problems, but maybe Volkanovski's going to probably beat him. However, I still would like to see Holloway fight... Ortega. I think that's a more wiser decision, because if Ortega gets back for that loss that he suffered, then he can go and then move on to Volkanovski because it just eliminates Max Holloway completely from the equation. But who knows if Holloway himself, he hasn't said much since the last fight, so he could be working.
He's been very quiet. Unusually quiet. Very strange. Where is Holloway?
Yeah.
Where is he?
He's probably out there right now in Hawaii in some cave right now, you know, pushing heaps of weight. He puts like punching through rocks.
He's probably 200 pounds now. He's getting thick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Probably eating all the donuts, all the cupcakes.
Yeah. All those. Yeah. Well,
all the cupcakes.
He loves his food.
And the Hawaiians love their food. So I reckon he's getting thick and he's getting mean and he's just. It's weird that he's so quiet. Mm. It's weird that he hasn't put anything really out on social media.
Yeah. I think there might be an announcement for him next year. I would love to see him come back. Would love to see him even fight Khabib or Ortega. You know, Ortega versus Khabib fight. You know, it's got to be one of the two. But I feel like Max Holloway has lost already twice to Volkanovski. Even though the second one was a little bit more controversial, I feel like just giving him a third title fight straight away is a little bit unfair because the featherweight division is incredibly stacked. It's probably the most stacked, one of the most stacked, like I said, we said in the last podcast, it's probably one of the four most stacked divisions.
Mm.
So, what about you? Do you think Ortega can beat Volkanovski?
I think he does pose threats and I think he does look different from what Ortega 2.0 is very mysterious, and he's apparently he's been working on a lot of things. He's changed his camp a lot. I think he still kept around one of the Gracies with him, but I'm blanking on the name. But he's changed up his team. He's changed up some of his coaching as well. He does look different. He looked very different in the Korean Zombie fight. You know, he looked a lot more well-rounded. More elusive, more evasive. His striking had gone up a notch. He was apparently hated wrestling, but he was able to mix the wrestling, like the takedowns and the striking, very well. You know, able to fake the takedown and then go up to the top and vice versa. I thought he was doing very well. I feel like Volkanovski is more well-rounded, though.
Mm.
The one place I find that Ortega could present the biggest problem for Volkanovski is if he gets taken down by Volkanovski, Ortega produces problems with his vast jiu-jitsu background.
Yes.
That's the place where I don't see him outstriking Volkanovski, especially leg kicks wise, because we know Volkanovski, you know, his leg kicks are crazy. And his striking is very good as well, but I don't feel his striking will overtake Volkanovski's, but I do think his Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is the wild card.
Yes.
When he gets taken down.
Yeah.
Interesting to see, because I'd love to see how evolved Ortega will be the next time he fights when he goes for that title shot.
Right.
This sounds like a good time to stop, to wrap up.
Yep. I'm happy with that.
We wrapped up the last UFC fight, Korean Zombie, all that shit. And UFC 254.
Yeah.
So, incredible fight. Khabib versus Gaethje.
We'll probably be at the Crown watching it happen.
Yeah, well,
it's going to be a late one Saturday night.
Well, in Western Australia, which is where we are, the main event will be at 2 a.m. in the morning, which means that the Khabib versus Gaethje won't happen at 2 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah.
Because there's about six fights.
Yeah.
It will probably occur, 3:30, 4 in the morning? So, we're going to be up. I mean, I don't drink coffee, but I may have to have a coffee.
I'm already drinking one of these.
You're going to have to bring a six pack of those, dude. So we're hyped for Khabib versus Gaethje, but fuck, I'm going to have a little sleep. We'll have to turn up to the Crown at what, midnight?
We got to do it, man.
We got to do it. It's one of these things that you have to do. And then if you're a fight fan, you got to be there.
Then we just crash on it. We do the podcast afterwards and then we crash on a Sunday. Early Sunday morning podcast.
Just sleep for the rest of the day.
How after the podcast, just crash on the floor. Anyway, we'll see what happens, all right?
Yeah.
We'll see what happens. All the best, guys.
Peace. Bye.